This is for the men who never settle. The ones who believe only quitters end a game in a tie. The type of guys who choose the bar with the biggest TVs to overcompensate for theirs at home. This is the Lodge mentality. This is Twin Peaks.
The show that takes you home. The Home Stretch with Sterling Holmes on ESPN Kansas City. 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, and the ESPN Kansas City Facebook page.
Welcome to the Home Stretch, ESPN Kansas City, live on... It was a beautiful Tuesday. It turned into a rainy Tuesday. But I can't complain, right? Because it's October 24th and I'm not absolutely bundled up. We got Dylan Michaels behind the glass looking like a lumberjack. What part of Portland are you from? The hippie part? Or the
downtown area.
Downtown, the hippie part? I figured. I didn't know if you were an actual lumberjack or the hippie wannabe lumberjack type, but...
I'm right in between. Like, I've never actually chopped a tree down, but I feel like I could, so...
I think you could, but that's also in relation to either you or me. And I don't think I'm taking a tree down. Don't think so. You, on the other hand, look like you have the traits, if you will. Like, if we're doing a combine, if this is the NFL combine, but for tree cutting, for lumberjacking, it's all you.
The frame.
You got the frame for it. You got the want to. I'm just undersized. But I'll tell you what, first one in, last one out. Bring my lunch pail to work type of guy.
Mustache.
Well, the mustache makes it at least competitive. At least competitive. How you doing, man? I feel like we haven't done a show together in a while.
It's been a minute. I mean, it's definitely been a minute since we've done consecutive shows because we had a lot of baseball to get to, a lot of high school football, things like that. So,
and quite frankly,
busy on this station.
Thursday and Friday, I don't think I'm going to be here. That's on me.
At least we get tomorrow.
Friday, I got a golf tournament. Thursday, I have an interview with Raheem Mostert, which I believe will be happening during this show. And, well, can't do it live. Can't do two. Surprisingly, Dylan, I can't do two things at once. As much as I would like to, I cannot. We will hear from Javon Kearse. I had a chance to interview Javon Kearse.
Who do you think you are?
Yesterday.
Kelsey.
I am.
Doing two things at once.
My home is my auto, baby. I had a chance to sit down and interview Javon Kearse. That was a lot of fun, so we'll hear from him later on in this show. The freak, dude. I can't believe that. He was 6'5", 265, and ran a 4.43. Imagine being a quarterback. No, thank you. So we'll hear from him later on in this show. A little news, if you will. Not fun news. But I'm going to read this verbatim from ESPN because I'm not going to give any thoughts on this yet until we get more information coming out. But Chiefs Justin Ross charged with domestic battery and property damage. This is on ESPN. Adam Teicher is the one that put up this little article here. Justin Ross has been charged with domestic battery and criminal property damage of less than $1,000. Court records in Johnson County, Kansas show. Both of these charges are now misdemeanors. Ross was arrested Monday in Shawnee, Kansas. An arraignment has been set for Tuesday afternoon. The Kansas domestic battery charge that Ross is facing is defined as knowingly causing physical contact with a person with whom the offender is involved or has been involved in a dating relationship or a family or household member when done in a rude, insulting, or angry manner. End quote. The items in the property damage charge, according to the Shawnee police, include a laptop, a computer monitor, an iPhone, a gold bracelet, and a car key. He originally had been facing a felony charge with damage value exceeding $1,000, but has since been amended to a misdemeanor of a value of less than $1,000. Chiefs said they are aware, but no comment. All right. Moving on. Before we talk more Chiefs, before we talk Javon Kearse, let's talk a little baseball. I think everyone's happy right now because the Astros are going home. Texas Rangers, they win in Houston 11-4, winning Game 7. I just can't. Can't talk enough about Adolis Garcia. This is a dude who no one wanted. This was a guy who, 26 years old, finally got a tryout. And what's he do now that he's 30? Oh, yeah, has 20 RBIs already this playoffs. Hit a grand slam on Sunday's game. And then, of course, last night, 4 for 5, 2 home runs and 5 RBIs, all while playing some gold glove defense out there in right field. Rangers, all that offseason spending, all the building over the past couple seasons, bringing in guys like Marcus Semien, Corey Seager, Mitch Garver to an extent, Nathaniel Lowe, right? Then you have the young guns, Leota Taveras, Josh Young, Jonah Heim, Evan Carter. They're getting it done, and some of the pitchers have really paid off well, while Max Scherzer, obviously the trade deadline piece, not been ideal, and Aroldis Chapman has been, pre-Royals. Aroldis Chapman was fixed by the Kansas City Royals, then goes to the Rangers and reverts back to what he was last year. It's wild to me. The Royals fixed him, and the Rangers broke him. But guys like Jordan Montgomery, I mean, let's be real now. If you would have said Jordan Montgomery would be the best pitcher for the Rangers when they have guys like Scherzer and DeGrom on their team, Eovaldi, you'd say it's asinine. You'd say it's crazy. But Jordan Montgomery has been absolutely nails for the Texas Rangers. Oh, by the way, the Rangers have never, never won a World Series. I know Dylan back there is very excited because he's now rooting for the Rangers. I didn't know he was a Texas guy. I thought you were a Portland guy.
As Rodney so eloquently, wow, put it in the chat, any team playing the Astros, doesn't matter who, I will be cheering for that team. So, and also I like Bochy. I kind of do like Bruce Bochy, and the fact that he comes out of retirement and just picks right up where he left off with the San Francisco, almost at 49ers, Giants.
Yeah.
Just mowing through the playoffs as a probably not the favorite wild card team-ish. And they've never won one in their history.
They last went to one, was it 2011? When Nelson Cruz had the opportunity to make the catch in right field. I feel bad.
It's a tough catch.
It's a tough catch. Let's be
especially
real now.
For Nelson Cruz.
Nelson Cruz. We're not talking about a Alex Gordon in left, okay? We're not talking about Kevin Kiermaier in center. We're talking Nelson Cruz in right field. And the reason he was playing right was because at that point, Vladimir Guerrero had no knees. Wasn't Guerrero on that team, if I'm not mistaken? Oh, no, that's fine, Dylan. Don't answer. I wasn't trying to get any information from you.
I apologize. I am making audio. What was that?
That was 2010.
That's what I thought.
And so, and then he was in Baltimore in 2011, which, by the way, his final year in the majors, he batted 290.
Who was in the World Series in 2011? Does it say?
Well, it's shipping the Rangers. Rangers lost in the World Series to the Cardinals.
That's right.
4-3. That was
Giants, Rangers, and Cardinals.
David Freese.
It's funny. It's crazy. Think about that. Bochy denied them once.
Yeah.
As a Giants manager.
Yeah. David Freese.
Have you seen Bruce Bochy on the podium?
He's
comparing
great
height and size to like all the other players, basically, that are professional athletes.
Mm-mm.
And he makes them look like a 13U team. He's a big dude.
Bochy is?
Yes. It's like the two people who are standing out on that podium last night are Chris Young and Bruce Bochy. Then everyone else is there.
And Chris Young's 6'10".
No, Chris Young's huge, but Bochy's not much shorter.
Apparently, when I typed in Chris Bochy, like his size, he has an 8 1/8-inch dome.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
Dude.
Big dude.
You know how big of a head? That's Barry Bonds allegedly on roids big. He's 6'3". That's a big dude. I can't get over that head size. To put it in perspective, I'm 7 1/8. He's 8 1/8. That is a large cranium. Tonight, game 7. Arizona and the Phillies. I am shocked it has gone this far. I talked to Jeff Passan on last Thursday, and we both said, you know what? You almost never pick sweeps in baseball because, well, these are two good teams. Margins are slim in baseball. And in a seven-game series, you expect a team who's got this far to win a game, right? You have an off day. They get hot for a game. All right, it is what it is. But we both said, you know what? We think the Phillies are going to sweep Arizona. At that point, they were up 2-0. Game three was that night. We thought it's over. It ain't over. Three games apiece. Love seeing yet another game seven in the baseball playoffs.
Does it worry you? And I'm a Phillies guy, too. I don't care who wins. I feel like I can root for any team left because none of them are the Astros or the Yankees. But does it worry you how many times you guys have had an opportunity to end the series?
Phillies have had many a chance. Had a chance last night. Didn't do it. Got shelled. It wasn't even close last night. There was wins out of the sails very, very early. It's Ranger Suarez tonight who's been electric. 14 innings in the playoffs. 0.64 ERA. Is that good, Dylan?
Has he done it at home? I feel like this guy, I always watch Ranger on the road and he's nails, but is he one of those better away than home guys? Or has he played?
Could be.
Look.
Citizens Bank Park is a hitter's ballpark.
I'm trying to think of a game where I was shocked to see the Diamondbacks had come back and won late. Was it five?
Any game Craig Kimbrell's been in?
Yes, it was that one.
Craig Kimbrell's blown two games already this series.
So that's who?
Craig Kimbrell is buns, dude. That dude is cheeks. He is washed up. You think Russell Wilson's washed up? Look at Craig Kimbrell. I mean, seriously. The fact that he's ever pitched in a high-leverage situation is absurd. Now, I get it. You can't throw out Jose Alvarado every single game. I get all that stuff. Anyone else? Pick a fan. Have Alec Bohm coming from third base to pitch instead of Craig Kimbrell. Anyone besides Kimbrell. It'll be Ranger Suarez against Brandon Pfaadt tonight, who's also been very good for the Diamondbacks. 2.13 ERA in the playoffs, 12 and two-thirds innings, 15 strikeouts. To me, the X factor is Kyle Schwarber for the Phillies, and then for the Diamondbacks, it has to be Ketel Marte. Ketel Marte has been on an absolute tear. He is 17 for 43 with four doubles, a triple, and a home run over his past 10 games in the playoffs. Yeah, pretty good. Kyle Schwarber has been absolutely raking. All he does is hit bombs, dude. Kyle Schwarber is Babe Ruth in the playoffs. He even runs like him. I don't know if you saw the video of him running from first to third. It literally looks like Babe Ruth. He is the most unathletic runner I've ever seen in my entire life. Doesn't matter when you drop bombs three or four times a series. All right, I got the Phillies at home tonight. Arizona, congratulations getting this far, but I think the Cinderella story ends here. What do you think, Dylan?
I want the Phillies to win. I do.
Wow,
like,
you think you got money to spend a night? Let's just say you got $5 to put on a team.
I bet against my heart, so I win either way. That's kind of my betting mindset in situations like this where I don't want to. It's already exciting enough. It's game seven. You really don't have to put money on it. Like, in my rule is, like, if you want to make something exciting, throw some money on it a little bit.
Sure.
Type of deal. So I don't really have to throw money, but if I do, I just feel like the Diamondbacks, because you, like you said, like Kimbrel, you had chances to put him.
He's so bad, man.
To put him, if you win one of those games, it's over, obviously. But, you know, it's kind of that feel to it.
The Phillies bullpen makes me so nervous. They need to get up big.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
And stay up big.
Mm-hmm.
Ranger Suarez needs to go 5-plus innings at a minimum, because I do not trust the Phillies bullpen at all. Switching gears, talking a little NFL. Tennessee Titans say they might play both Will Levis and Malik Willis if Ryan Tannehill is out. Good play here.
This is the first time I've heard Will Levis's name since draft night, so good for him.
Is this a case of Malik Willis has impressed, or this is why Will Levis fell to the second round and was not a top 10, top 15, first round? He was a second round quarterback for a reason. Mm. Because seriously, everyone was thinking, at least not everyone, I was not one of them, because I watched him play in person before at Kentucky and did not think he was very good.
But I have to do. Sorry, I knew he wasn't good when you could look at his yards per attempt.
Yeah,
and they were very low against good. Someone said that Bill Walsh, siren, everything you need to say. Here comes Dylan's 80s Niners talk. But one of the ways to see if a quarterback is confident and can handle NFL speed is, does his yards per attempt go up in bigger games, like against Bama or Georgia?
Sure.
Or does it go down? Meaning, is he checking it down? Is it behind the line of scrimmage throws? Is he not confident in pushing the ball down the field? And if you look at Will Levis's games against any competition, it's much lower than the games where Kentucky was favored.
I'm just a little confused about using both. I don't know. Maybe it's a ploy. Maybe it's a ploy, and they'll when it starts, they'll play one. But this isn't college.
No. And there's a litany of examples in NFL history of using two quarterbacks is just not the way to do it.
It doesn't work.
It doesn't.
College, fine. NFL.
Because in a lot of the stories and a lot of the things you hear when they are going through these trying times, like Tom Landry used two quarterbacks, Craig Morton and Roger Staubach.
Yeah.
And history shows he chose Roger and said, I have to do this because they were, players were saying, we don't know who to follow.
Yes.
Like we need a guy that we can follow as a team, as a defense, especially every other position looks to one guy. We don't need two guys. That's why the old adage is, if you have two quarterbacks, you really don't have one type thing.
I think it works in college football to an extent, honestly, but the NFL is just a different.
Chris Leak, Tim Tebow. I mean, we can start the list there and
go. I mean, honestly, I also think relatively new, obviously, K-State, Avery Johnson and Will Howard. I think they both bring something to the table. I think Will Howard has the leadership. He's been there. They've followed him. I think he's got a decent arm, but he's been struggling this year. I think Avery Johnson, the new blood, right? You inject that into the offense, the speed, the arm strength. Like, sometimes in college it works. I just don't think it does in the NFL. And again, this all might be a ploy. If it were me, you drafted Will Levis in the second round. See him for a game. You've seen Malik Willis before in a game. And if I'm not mistaken, that they chose Josh Dobbs one game over him? Or was he injured?
No, you're right.
But I
thought
they chose.
The game they needed to win.
They needed
to
win.
To the playoffs.
And they chose Josh Dobbs over Malik Willis. Was that against the Chiefs? No, it wasn't against the Chiefs.
Jags,
yeah. But my point stands is, if you didn't trust him then, why not try and see a full game out of Will? Maybe because both aren't the guy. Rams release kicker Brett Maher after three missed kicks and lost. That breaking news also lost Sterling his fantasy football game. Yeah, I lost fantasy football because of a kicker. I get no one cares about fantasy football or your golf score, but you're going to hear it because that sucks. You lose fantasy football because of a kicker? And I'm a guy who never wants to see kickers or defense in fantasy football because I think it's just a little silly, right? Dylan, maybe I'm on a limb here. I don't want to see kickers or defenses in fantasy football. Drives me insane. And of course, it comes to roost, my worst nightmare. This happens. Jordan Addison goes off for, what, two touchdowns and 110 yards.
And one of them should not have even happened.
Yeah. Do you understand me sitting on my couch, irate?
I do now. Like, I can imagine. It's funny because I was thinking, boy, that would be a tough
player
to be playing.
I'm thinking, I'm sitting pretty. Everything's going great. Barring Jordan Addison going off, my kicker being a dumpster fire won't matter. Little do I know, Jordan Addison turned into Randy Moss. And I lose. But you know what you do in that situation, Dylan? You bet on him. That way you can't be that upset. That's what I did, and it worked out. All right, We will take a quick break. We're going to come back, and I'll play my interview I did with Javon Kearse, Homestretch, ESPN, Kansas City.
Come on.
Listen, it was exciting. We gave the people what they wanted. We could go out there and just beat somebody down. And then just all of a sudden, like, oh, these guys stacked the deck or whatever. Like, no, we came in to have some fun and they ended up winning. But we gave the fans what they wanted.
Who are your teammates? Who are the teammates and opponents you're going up against?
I mean, well, it was me and then I teamed up with my former Gator, Titus O'Neal. Well, actually, he was Thaddeus Bullitt back then. And I don't know why he changed his name to Titus O'Neal. I've got to against Don Staley and Zaire Cook, like, yeah. With the WNBA or whatever. And, you know, like, I think it was built up for them, the unhanded thing. And Dunn, I saw that Dunn played in a few tournaments before already, like on television, like for Justinville. So she already had some good practice, but it was good. We had fun, and it went down to the last bag.
I want to talk about how you started off your career. You had 35 sacks in your first three seasons, obviously winning Rookie of the Year. But some players have such a hard time transitioning to the NFL. How are you able to make it so seamless?
I'm thinking maybe because I had a really good position coach. He kind of made things like easier for me, a lot less thinking, really just, and then we got together as soon as I got in, because I played outside linebacker, stem linebacker at Florida. And the only time that I really ran to the quarterback was I was like standing up, playing in like a 4-3, but just standing up, but not getting that defensive end stance, which I'm glad I did when I got to the league, because me getting in that sprinter stance was the best thing for me, because it helped keep me low and it got me in a good position to go straight on a straight path to the quarterback. So, I mean, the transition from coming in my rookie year was just like, I'm like, hold on. I'm like, this is what I'm going to do. I'm used to standing in front of the tight end, you know, trying to take him on. Is he blocking? Is he releasing? Oh, he's releasing. Oh, shoot. Am I blitzing this play? I don't know. Am I covering this play or whatever? But when I move to defensive end, it's like line up there, pick up aim and point, and go hit that spot. And if someone on that spot, when you hit it, hit them. If not, keep on going and then go hit the person with the ball. And, I mean, it wasn't that simple, but that's what I simplified it down to.
I'm going to talk about a game that you actually had a safety in, and that's part of one of the craziest endings in NFL history, the Music City Miracle. I'd love to hear your thoughts and just your perspective, your vantage point on this game.
That one right there, I would say that was one of the first situations to where, like, you ever see this cliche, oh, football is a game of inches. Well, no shoot is a game of inches, okay? You have all these feet and yards out there, whatever. Inches and centimeters are going to be a part of the game. But that game right there was that going into that music. First of all, I'm a huge Bruce Smith fan. And then going to that game, I was looking forward like to seeing him and meet him and then watch him play or whatever. And he actually ended up getting, I think he got maybe two sacks against us. And I got me two sacks, two cost fumbles in the safety or whatever. So that part right there felt good. You know, me felt like I was kind of going up against one of my idols. So that part right there was good. And then the play at the end, this play called the Music City. It was the Music City Miracle, but that play was the home run throwback. We practiced that play so many times in practice, and it looked like, oh, man, we just wasting our time. Guys just went over to the side and then throw the ball back, and then somebody catches it, and then do something else and whatever, like, this would never work, but okay, let's practice it. And then when we got in that game and did it, that throw across the field from Frankie Wycheck to Kevin Dyson, listen here, football is a game of inches. I had this conversation again, like, it's football season. I don't know why I have this conversation like so often, but had some more conversations about, was it a lateral or was it a backwards lateral? Was it a forward lateral? I'm like, it wasn't a forward lateral. If anything, it was a lateral close to a backwards lateral or whatever, which was legit because still to this day, you got Bill fans who still call it a forward lateral. But I'm like, you got, at this point, you just got to let it go. At this point, like, it's way behind us. It is what it is, okay? But that was another one of those situations, like that game there. And then it just said just so much. I mean, like, the way that game, like, started, the way it ended, because, like, we was, I felt like we was up for a second, and then they got up. It was no more time left. And it just, yes, that one game on itself, football game of inches, it's not over until it's over. 16 seconds left for me to come and do that. So it just pretty much just, it kind of, I want to say, made a whole bunch of cliches, like, sound true, like, sound real or whatever. And, like, you hear this stuff all the time, whatever. So not over to the fat lady thing. And the fat lady wasn't ready until we came out with the W. So a lot of good things came out of that game. A lot of great memories.
I know they look back and they actually did an analyst viewpoint of, was it forward or backwards? And you're correct. They said it was not a forward lateral. It was legit. So you're all good. Bills fans got to calm down. But as I sit here in Kansas City, we're obviously very fond of Andy Reid being here in Chiefs Kingdom. You played under Andy Reid for a few seasons. What was your relationship like with Andy? What was it like having him as your head coach?
That was my guy. I mean, unfortunately, on the paper, two different coaches in the league, 11 years, two different coaches, Jeff Fisher and Andy Reid. I got to be real with you. Andy Reid was that dude. Like, I don't know, maybe because he played offensive line or whatever, and, like, he felt us big guys more, but he was a true player coach, and, like, he looked out for the guys. Not in a way that you would like take advantage of it, or not in a way to where like he's babying people here and there. He don't do that. Like, I never see him baby anyone. I see him treat everyone with respect. And then basically, like, the way you go about your job, go about your business, that's the way he's gonna treat you. And, like, basically, and that's the way it always been in all 4 years that I was there. And even up to this point now, his wife still reaches out to me and lets me know about the grandkids, about the brothers, about the sisters, about the great grandkids, about the nieces and nephews. And she, like, she sends out, like, newsletters, like, often, and I'm on that list, so I get to know what's going on in the Reid household and all the Reid households.
Before I let you go here, you played in a more physical era. In regards to hitting the quarterback, that was allowed in your day. You look at it now. Yeah. You look at some of the penalties. How hard is it for a defensive player? Because I'm always sitting here going, you're a perfect example. 6'5", 265, you're in a 4.43. Again, that's why they called you the freak. I mean, that's just absurd. Yes. They're just some very large human beings. How are they supposed to try and slow down? How are they supposed to not put their body weight on the guy? I mean, how difficult is this for these defensive players?
It's very difficult. And then I remember back when they started changing some of the rules, I ran into some of my former teammates who were still playing. I played with William Hayes. He came out of Winston-Salem State, but I played with him at in Nashville with the Titans, and then he came down and played with the Dolphins. But I remember talking to him afterwards when they were making all those changes, and he actually ended up hurting his knee. I think he hurt his ACL or MCL because he was going after a quarterback and taking him down, and he was trying not to fall on top of him. And then after that same season, look, I think this may have been like around like maybe 2010, maybe 11 or 12, when they was making all those changes then. And then a bunch of injuries were happening to guys trying to avoid him. Guys, personally, I think they should look at each situation. Like, you have some situations where things look intentional. Then you also have other situations where someone's just reacting and playing the game. I think each situation should be looked at separately. And then on top of that, just, I don't know, you have some situations where, you know, you're trying to make a play, trying to get there or whatever. So maybe the team should figure this part out. Like, okay, we know you didn't mean to do that. Maybe the team could probably help a guy out, depending on if he keeps getting fined and don't have the money to pay the fines. But on top of that, it's just a bunch of rule changes, and they try to protect the offense and let the offense score points. And offense. And so my defensive guys out there, keep doing y'all thing, man, and keep playing full speed, keep reacting to how you react, and don't get in trouble.
Huge three-time Pro Bowler Javon Kearse. Huge shout out to Johnsonville, again, the official sausage of the SEC. Javon Kearse, I gotta say, man, I gotta get out with you on the boards. You're not getting second next year. Come on, if you had me out there, we're getting first.
No, I should have got further past you, but this next time I'm ready. I'm ready to run it back. Already run it back part two.
I appreciate your time, Javon. Really do appreciate it.
Welcome again to Sports Video 810 WHB. Sterling Holmes joined now by Chiefs Hall of Fame kicker Nick Lowry. And as always, Nick Lowry is brought to you by El Bandido Yankee Tequila. Make sure you stop by your local Hy-Vee and pick up some of the best tequila out there on the market. So smooth, it's criminal. Nick, how are you?
I'm great. I'm sure you are too, having a lot of fun. I think it's sort of like a relationship on a personal level, when you get to know somebody, and with each year you get to know their patterns and why they have great qualities. Hopefully you've got that kind of quality person in your life. Well, the Chiefs are that quality team. And here we have, you know, each year our challenges in terms of personnel. We will lose a coach, like we've lost Eric Bieniemy this year. We'll lose a couple players, especially when you're winning championships. And to watch the way, you know, this team learns, the bottom line, which is a great organization, a great owner, a great coach, and then, of course, a remarkable trio of leaders in Chris Jones, who's got his head in the game. That people don't, I think, give him enough credit for being aware of situations as he's battling and wrestling and punching around with whatever offensive lineman is fighting him. And then, of course, Travis Kelce, and the way he can recognize coverages and is almost on an ESP level with Patrick Mahomes. You watch that first half, and I don't know if I've ever seen a tight end more open, more dominant in a given half. And Patrick had, 20 for 23, 321 yards and three touchdowns in the first half, including that funny little shovel pass where it was more like rugby pushing Travis into the end zone. But I, for the life of me, and I'd love your opinion of this, Sterling, if you're scouting the Kansas City Chiefs, you know about Patrick Mahomes. The second guy you worry about on defense is always going to be Travis Kelce. They didn't seem to have a clue about what to do about Travis. They didn't seem to have any special strategy, and he was wide open. He had, I think, five different 15-yard and plus receptions, right?
Yeah.
To go with the 12 of 13 targets. At one point, he was 10 for 10 of targets. I mean, those are unheard of numbers. And it's not just talent physically. It is the ability to have a former high school quarterback who just knows how to read the coverages and in turn knows how Patrick will anticipate what he's going to anticipate. So he's open by a couple yards and can fit it in there. And then let's throw in the other thing. People don't talk about it enough. Maybe they do, but I don't think they do or give him credit enough. Travis Kelce's hands.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember last year, because it stuck out so much, he dropped a key pass. But that's about it. I mean, I don't remember him dropping passes. And there are always people fighting for the ball. If you watched the Monday night game last night, you saw, you know, that collision with a former Kansas City Chief, I might say, where on one time he takes the ball and Tarvarius Ward – and takes the ball away from the receiver, then the second time the receiver takes it away from him. Those kinds of fights are happening to some degree on almost every play. So it's not just that you're catching the ball like you're playing cats. Let's face it. You are in a boxing match with a defensive back or the linebacker, whoever's covering you, and you've got to be able to not only catch it, but then they're going to try to punch it out. As our defensive backs, whether it's Trent McDuffie or L'Jarius Sneed or Justin Reed or Mike Edwards, I mean, they are gifted at punching it out. So it is just, to go back to my original theme, it's just fun watching these guys grow as a team and, by the way, as a defense. I mean, we have not given up more than 22 points in any game the entire year, and it wasn't like Justin Herbert was doing that badly, especially, you know, the first half. We shut them down, boom, in the second half. Shut them out.
Were you nervous at all when all of a sudden the offense for Kansas City was humming, which we'll touch on more a little bit later, but all of a sudden the defense reverted back to the 2018 defense? Part of me was sitting here going, oh no, we can't have it both ways, can we? Finally, the offense is picking things up, but the defense reverts back. Well, the defense that shut the Chargers out in the second half, was part of you nervous at all? That all of a sudden, the defense that has been so great for six games just may have been too good to be true?
No, not really. Getting back to what I was saying, you get to know that in that relationship, certain patterns. One pattern is that we play teams close. We always play San Diego close. That was the closest 31-17 score you could probably ever see, right? Yeah. I mean, it was closer than 31-17, but then we have a great play by Isaiah Pacheco, who really didn't dominate in the running game. I think he had 25 yards and 12 carries or something like that. But he made a key play, and everybody, that is the difference, right? We do have our stars, but we also have every single player making a key play. You know, Mecole Hardman, a 6-yard third down catch, and the next play we score that touchdown. I mean, you know, those characteristics. Kadarius Toney, he's going to have to step up because now that McColl's back, he may not be, you know, on the punt returns. By the way, McColl's 50-yard punt return was pretty darn important.
Huge,
as well. So,
yeah.
You know, Kadarius Toney has had some big games where he's contributed, especially in the Super Bowl. But everybody seems to, you know, contribute, and that's another tribute, so to speak, to Patrick Mahomes, being able to grow and evolve and mature, to be able to see the field and do the post-Tariq Hill factor, which is, you know, instead of one ridiculously dominant receiver along with Travis Kelce, now it's 5 and 6 and 7 receivers and 10 receivers every game. And it's pretty hard to defense against that.
Yeah, I mean, you look at what Mahomes did. We'll get to those numbers in just one moment. But he hit 10 different receivers. 10 different players, I should say, had a reception. 6 had multiple receptions. He was spreading the ball out. Mahomes, 32 of 42, 424 yards, 4 touchdowns. That one interception that was more or less a third and long. It was a, hey, it's an arm punt, if you will. You know, if it gets picked off, it gets picked off. But we're going to try and make something happen here. How impressive was Mahomes in this game, and is this the catalyst for him going forward? We've talked about, you know, he looks a little off this year. There's just something that's not quite clicking compared to previous seasons. This one looked like a vintage Patrick Mahomes performance. Is this the catalyst for him going forward?
Well, let me say first off that that punt, that's the one thing that he can get even better at, which, you know, he had a couple – passes in the past years where, and in a couple games this year where, you know, he was almost lackadaisical mentally. This time, that interception was not lackadaisical, but it was not recognizing that he's got a pass rusher in his face and he couldn't properly follow through. And I remember Bill Kenny, you know, breaking his finger or stubbing his finger on the follow through. It happens to a lot of quarterbacks against that pass rusher. And so it sort of semi-stuffs the throw, so instead of being 5 yards farther where it would have been caught or certainly not intercepted, it's intercepted. And being able to recognize that, it's easy for me to say, it's all happening in a split second. But Patrick Mahomes had his best game of the year. Travis had his best game of the year. And if I'm Denver, I better have 3 guys on Travis. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And what's going to be fun about that this coming weekend is when they put, you know, they put the entire defense on Travis. You know, is it going to be Rashee Rice, who had a very good game, 6 receptions for 64 yards, a big touchdown? He seemed to be maturing. He's learning how to find, like Travis, by the way, that soft spot in the zone. And then Marvez Scanling, he had a pretty good game as well. So each game we have people step up. And by the way, let's shift to the defense as well. Yes, Patrick's just maturing. Let's pray that he and Travis stay healthy, because we saw in the first game how important Travis was to both of them and to the team. But let's talk a little bit about Charles Omenihu. I mean, here's a guy who I watched his press conference afterwards, and, you know, he just felt so relieved and really appreciated the way the Chiefs supported him, you know, when he was out for 6 games. And he came back, had a big sack. He said it was the biggest sack of his career. And think about what that does as he gets to know Chris Jones, taking that little bit of pressure and adding that little bit of pressure to, you know, the offensive lines and quarterbacks that already are facing, you know, a good pass rush with George Karlaftis and company. So I want to give some credit and some focus on Charles Omenihu and what that's probably going to do to add even more efficiency. And you know where it's going to show it? It's going to show it not just in pressures, but what happens when you're pressured? You throw the ball early, you throw it before you're ready, and you get turnovers.
Chiefs,
so watch our turnover ratio go up in the next 6 games.
Chiefs Hall of Fame kicker Nick Lowry is our guest right here, Sports Radio 810 WHB. And you mentioned it right there, actually, with Charles. He had that pass defense that actually turned into an interception. What he does, putting those big hands above his head to knock the ball up, allowed the Chiefs to pick the ball off. I mean, it is huge. He was so impactful in that game in all facets of it, and the versatility he brings to play inside and outside opens things up, not just for Chris Jones, but it opened it up for Mike Dana. It opens it up for George Karlaftis, two other guys who had sacks in that game. Drew Tranquil had a sack as well, playing against his former team, the Chargers. I mean, this Chiefs defense looks like they are peaking right now. And I don't want to say peaking early, but it looks like they're really playing well together. Charles Omenihu is almost a trade deadline acquisition, if you will, because he missed those first 6 games. So now he is the guy you bring back into the fold. I am just so elated to see Mahomes and this Chiefs team, this organization, finally have a good defense in the Mahomes era. You brought up Rashee Rice a little bit earlier, and I want to bring this up to you because we have not seen many rookies have immediate success in an Andy Reid system. What have you seen from him that really separates him from some of the previous rookies that have been here in Kansas City?
Well, first of all, you've got a quarterback that is continuing to throw to him. And secondly, what I just mentioned, which is the ability of the receiver, whether it's Travis or one of the wide receivers, to recognize a soft spot in the zone and break down. And then secondly, to be on the same page with Patrick, because he's looking at number one, number two, number three, number four. He gets to those different receivers. By the way, I compare it as such a stark contrast with Kyler Murray, who got that huge contract, but I rarely see him get past the first two, sometimes not even the first receiver, before he breaks down and runs. There's another thing, by the way, with Patrick is he had 4 runs, key first downs, crushing first downs that just take the spirit out of the defense. But Rashee Rice is, I think, just quietly, consistently. He's had a couple drops here and there, but everybody does here and there. They're human. But I think he's just finding himself and maturing as a receiver as he gets to know the system. And he's got that physicality. I mean, when you look at the stats he had last year, just ridiculous in college. And there are so many expectations. You sign a big number one draft pick contract, and you've seen a lot of players press too hard. Well, he's finding his way. I frankly don't want us to peak at this point. I simply want us to keep getting a little better here and there and doing the thing we do better than any team in the National Football League, which is find a way to win, no matter how it is, no matter how ugly it is, no matter how inconsistent it is, finding a way to make the key plays when they matter. That is what a champion does.
You mentioned the ability of Rashee Rice to find the soft spot in the zone a la Travis Kelce. But again, that is huge, and that's something that typically you don't see from young wide receivers, especially rookies. Just the other night, you know, on Monday Night Football, Alexander Mattison had an opportunity to find the soft spot in the red zone. And what did he do? He shifted. He swayed too far over and was able to make the defender come into play. Kirk Cousins couldn't make the throw there. You know, Juju Smith-Schuster thrived in finding the soft spots in the zone. And Rashee Rice, though, has the athleticism and the physicality to be both good against man as well as zone. It is very impressive we are seeing this so early on in his young career. Again, Chiefs Hall of Fame kicker Nick Lowry is our guest right here, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's take a look ahead here at the Broncos. The Chiefs facing the Broncos two times in 3 weeks. How hard is this for a team to beat a team two times in 3 weeks?
It's hard. It's hard. Because the emotion is there. The emotion that these guys made us look bad last week or 2 weeks ago. You know, it's right there. And you're playing in Denver. You've got altitude, mile-high altitude. And, you know, they're looking at 16 straight losses. And we better not be looking at 16 straight wins. Because you can never, ever – the sign of a great team is never taking anything for granted. Why Tom Brady – Bill Belichick are as great as they have been is because when they're asked after a game, you know how they did, they don't talk, so, you know, they talk for one sentence about how well they played and then boom, well, we got to correct this. We got to get ready for the next one. And that humility is what you got to have, staying hungry and humble. That's what this team has in its core leadership from Patrick and everyone. And by the way, Amenihu, I don't know him well. I know that he had some things to overcome. But I think you also draw, you know, when you're in a, going back to that idea of a relationship, when you're in the right relationship, people bring out qualities in you. When you have the right coach who sees you as an individual, and that also goes for Spagnuolo, you know, the guys that see you and know what buttons to push and what motivates you, and most importantly, never taking things for granted, being confident, but not being cocky. That's a beautiful thing about this team. And that's how you fall in love with them, right? Yeah. You fall in love with them because they don't get too high on themselves.
Yeah. When we look forward at this Broncos-Chiefs game, who are you looking at for your El Bendito Yankee Tequila player of the game? You've been nails this year. You've picked some really good ones. I think you actually even had Marquez Valdes-Scantling last week. And what's he do? He has that 47-yard touchdown. Who are you looking at this week for your El Bendito Yankee Tequila player of the game?
I'm going to go with Charles Amenihu. I think he needed, you know, I mean, he didn't have a preseason. He watched for 6 weeks. He had to practice separately, I think, most of that time, right? So, you know, it takes a little while to get into that rhythm with the people on either side of you. So I'm going to look for him to have two sacks this week. And, you know, have you also noticed in NFL games in general, but also our defense, jumping up and blocking passes at a higher rate than I remember.
Yeah.
That is huge. I mean, that creates so much panic on the part of the quarterback. You can't be confident, might have to jump a little bit, has to throw at a higher level, you know, bigger arc on the ball. So those are little things I'm noticing that we're doing better this year than in the past. So I'm going to go with Charles Amenihu, blocking passes, putting extra pressure. I think he has a 23.5% pressure rate. And add that when you've got Chris Jones, who I said earlier, you know, it's not just his physicality. He's a big guy. He's agile, but he's incredibly strong against a 330-pound lineman. He can still throw them around. But he's also aware. He sees the field as he's in that battle. And then you got a guy now, a new guy next to him that can put that added pressure. It's going to cause hesitation and inconsistency on the other side. So it's going to be fun to watch, and I'm going to put my El Bandito mark of excellence on Charles Amenihu against the Broncos this week.
I'm going to have to say and take a basketball moniker here. Russell Wilson's going to have to fake a pass, then make a pass, because he's not the biggest dude. He was getting the ball knocked down a lot a couple weeks ago against Kansas City. Well, now you add in Charles, a lot more arms getting thrown up there. Fake a pass, then make a pass if you are Russell Wilson. All right, Nick Lowry, score prediction, what do you have?
I'm going to go with Chiefs 31, actually, yeah, 34. Chiefs 34 and Denver 20. I think, you know, once again, let's give Spagnuolo credit. Look what he did at the adjustments at halftime. I think it will be somewhat close at halftime, and then we're going to make a couple plays because we'll notice, and our great coaching staff will make those adjustments. So I'm going to go with 34-20 in Denver, but you just never know.
And that right there, everyone, is an El Bendito Yankee Tequila victory right there. Make sure you go out to Hy-Vee, pick up some El Bendito Yankee Tequila, the best tequila out there on the market. It is so freaking good. Even if you do not like tequila, trust me, I am not a tequila guy. I had it, and it is phenomenal. Go get El Bendito Yankee Tequila at your local Hy-Vee. Chiefs Hall of Fame kicker, Nick Lowry. Nick, always a pleasure.
Thanks, brother. You're the best. Go Chiefs.
Take a quick break. Come back. Sports Radio 810 WHB.